This is Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, an extended conversation with Indiana State Representative Charlie Brown. The Gary Democrat has announced that he is not going to run for re-election. We'll talk with him about that, about the legacy that he is leaving behind as a member of the General Assembly after this session is over, which is his last, and some other comments as well, too, that you'll want to catch with Charlie Brown coming up. Also, we'll talk with Debbie Coble, who is the president and CEO of Goodwill Industries of Michiana. They have a special program getting underway on December 6th, and we'll find out more about some of the other operations that the Goodwill Industries operates here in our region, as well as another in the series of conversations, the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. State Representative Charlie Brown, a Democrat from Gary, represents District 3 in the Indiana House of Representatives, has decided he's not going to run for re-election, that this upcoming General Assembly term will be his last session, that he will sit making the drive to Indianapolis in his car from I-65 and having to spend time in Indianapolis during the days and the sessions in the State House. And we have an opportunity here to talk with Representative Brown about the past as well as about the future. Representative Brown, thank you for being with us here on Regionally Speaking today.
My pleasure.
Well, give us some thoughts that you had in a lot of discussion that you mentioned in the announcement that you had with your wife and family about deciding that that you didn't want to have to make that long drive from Northwest Indiana down to Indianapolis many more times.
It is a challenge, especially having to travel in the dead of winter, mm-hmm. you know, by virtue of us having to be there during the long session from January through the end of April. And next year, we have to wrap up. We start on January 3rd, and we have to wrap up by March 15th during the short session. I've worn out quite a few vehicles over the 35-year period that I have been taking this sojourn to Indianapolis. And it is a real challenge that many folk do not realize what a challenge it is, family-wise, health-wise, and just a toll on that long ride, especially around the Rensselaer, Lafayette area, with always some kind of snow issue that is different from the area up here in Northwest Indiana. So, and then looking at the Democratic numbers in the House of Representatives, I feel it's safe to say that it will be a while before we can look at being in the majority again. And I said, it's time to let someone else pick up that mantle and take that trip and learn more about state government and how we function down there.
Now, over the years, you have championed a number of causes, and in particular for us in Northwest Indiana here, you've been one of the chief supporters of anything involving Northwest Indiana, not only in politics, but business and economic development and the like, to your colleagues downstate. Much as I hate to use that word, the folks in Illinois don't care, but I do not like to use the word downstate, because it kind of denotes that there are two states, and right now there's only one in Indiana. But the idea is that you have basically an opportunity, and you've used this opportunity over the years as I guess a bully pulpit, no doubt, but an opportunity to really, really promote Northwest Indiana to your colleagues at the State House, as well as other people, I'm sure, in Central Indiana that could care less about Northwest Indiana.
Absolutely. It is kind of intriguing that those from the southern end of the state, when they walk into the chamber, they start out with a negative sense or feel for what is known as the region.
Right.
And it's mostly negative, you know. They obviously they may have heard some positive things, but the things that stick with them is the number of elected officials that have been indicted and maybe gone to jail, and this whole issue of the dead voting, that there are a lot of more votes than there are citizens in the region. And that's what they talk about. And they don't realize how painful that is, that they walk in, never been to this area of the state, but yet are talking negatively about this area of the state. And that's why I made a couple of efforts in trying to get, years and years ago, we used to have, during the summer months, that would be host in a given region to invite all 150 legislators into the region. And it's social, but it's also an opportunity to get other legislators who are not familiar with a given area to learn more about that. And also it helps the local legislators who may be hosting that to get their colleagues to see the needs of that particular area. And so we used to rotate that people would come. We would have a weekend activity here in Lake County, and then we would travel to the southern end of the state, Evansville or farther south, and try to get camaraderie and understanding of the needs of that community by the entire body.
I recall talking with you in one of our earlier regionally speaking programs, and I'm talking like around 2010, about some of these first trips where you've invited state lawmakers from elsewhere in the state to come to Northwest Indiana, and there's always very positive results. You get some great comments, and I guess you hate to think it sounds so trite, but some of them I'm sure say, I never knew this happened. I never knew it was like this.
But absolutely. That's the exact reaction to when they come up here and see the beauty of the lakefront or the ambiance of this area, and that it is not all what they read in the newspaper about this area. And you know, I used to get upset with the reference to the region, but the Affordable Care Act became known as Obamacare. Well, you turn that around and you make it into a positive, and that's what we have attempted to do in terms of using the terminology, the region.
I know one of the big things that you're most associated with and very proud of as far as economic development is concerned is working with the fellow lawmakers and establishing the bill that became law back in 2005 that established the Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority. And although the RDA has its detractors, even today, there are still a lot of people who are very supportive of the efforts that were made to help find a way for Northwest Indiana to be officially recognized as a spot where economic development not only needs to be, but is welcome, to be sure. So I'm sure that that makes you feel good knowing that is one of the accomplishments that you've been able to see over the decades as a state lawmaker.
And former legislator Representative Chet Dobus is to be commended for coming up with the concept of a regional development authority, mainly from the standpoint of we work in silos, as opposed to broadening and not looking just at the corporate limits of the city of Gary or the city of Hobart, but to look at, even if you do something that is specific to Gary, it benefits the entire area. If you do something in Hobart, it benefits all of us throughout the Lake County area. So this concept of a regional development authority has helped us come closer together and getting everyone to put resources and revenue into a pool to do specific and complete specific projects in a given area.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with State Representative Charlie Brown, the Democrat from Gary. He's decided he's not going to run for re-election after this General Assembly session. That will be his last. And look to the future here in Northwest Indiana in particular. And Representative Brown, I know besides economic development and your pushes to make sure that Northwest Indiana gets its fair share of state funds to come up here to deal with economic development, making life better for everybody up here, I know you've worked very hard to make personal lives better through your health care efforts, not only as being an educator in the past, but also working with health care issues. And one of the things I know you're best known for, and I'm sure you're most proud of, is the bill back in 2007 that helped create what is now Healthy Indiana Plan and what's happened from that. And I know that you used a personal example, I think, in one of the information I read that you used a private-public partnership to help show how important that having this program really, really is.
Yes, and many still do not realize that, you know, there's no sense in my saying I'm upset because I don't have a job, I'm upset because I'm not able to participate in certain activities, but your health is the most important thing to you. And the number of people that were going without any means of health care, and not realizing, I finally was able to convince my colleagues that it's like that old Fram oil commercial that was around years and years ago, where somebody didn't want to take care of their car by putting oil in it, and the commercial simply said, you pay me now or you pay me later. Ma'am. And that's what was happening as it relates to health care, that if we did not get to the point of saying, looking at those persons that did not have or could not afford health care, that ultimately their bodies are going to break down, and it then shifts that responsibility to the state or to the federal government. So why not provide some preventive efforts and maintenance efforts for these folks so that we would not have a big bill at the end because they did not or were not able to have basic preventive and care.
One of the efforts that, of course, we mentioned here about the Healthy Indiana Plan that is the result of the bill that became law that you you authored in the General Assembly back in the last decade has come to fruition, and some great benefits that have come out of that to help people in Indiana that otherwise couldn't afford health care. I know that you've also worked very hard, too, over the decades to see that there would be a statewide smoking ban put in place. And I know it was tough, during 2012 to see the last opportunity for that bill to go through, and it made it, but it got amended so many times, with so many exemptions. I'm sure that was probably the roughest time, even of all the years that you'd put an effort in that never got out of committee, or much less even to be considered on the Indiana House floor, to see all those changes made. But in light of that today, how do you think things have shaped up as far as having at least a modified statewide smoking ban?
Yeah, and it is, I'm proud of the fact that we did take that initial step and at least make some efforts to free. That's the most pleasing thing to me, that a total stranger may walk up to me and introduce themselves and say, I appreciate your efforts. Now I can go to my favorite restaurant and not have to be bothered or consuming all of that secondhand smoke. And that will be I will introduce that bill again this year to say no exemptions. That I know the casinos have kind of cornered the market with, state, if you force us to go smoke-free, you are going to lose revenue, as well as we, the individual casinos, are going to lose revenue. I don't necessarily buy into that, because you look at our next-door neighbor to the west, Illinois, has casinos, and they are totally smoke-free. And I don't think the first year they may have dipped when they went to smoke-free, but that, I think, was basically because of the economy. Mm-hmm. So if we say, and they made an effort here in Gary through the city council to try to get through that there would be no smoking at the Gary casinos, but, and I understand and appreciate the fact that the opposition said that, well, we're going to lose because the people will then go to East Chicago or to Hammond or to Michigan City if we're going to go, if we're the only one that do not allow smoking. So it's going to have to be a statewide effort. And I think that the state chamber, surprisingly, is one of my strongest supporters in this endeavor to say that in private clubs, in bars, and in casinos, we should be smoke-free.
Well, we'll see how that does when you introduce that in the upcoming session. Is there anything else that you have on your mind or that you already plotted out and got the initial efforts worked on to introduce any measures in the 2018 General Assembly session, which is going to be your last?
This is the most important one. Yeah. We are limited to 5 bills during the short session. There are a couple of others that I'm working on for the city of Gary. But the main issue, and I'm going to appeal to all my colleagues, that let me walk out of the door with this achievement of Indiana, mm-hmm. the entire state is smoke-free.
Okay. Let me ask you, Charlie Brown, you mentioned these great accomplishments that have already come to place, even if they've been amended. the smoking ban in particular for Indiana. What else do you think that you're going to be able to take home to tell people that your family already knows about for all the years that you've talked with them about the issues that you've had to deal with, and your colleagues up here in Northwest Indiana that are on the General Assembly? Anything in particular that you want to at least tell people that you're most proud of from all the decades, 35 years plus, that you've served as a state representative?
Well, years ago, we had to have a settlement with all of the tobacco companies because they were not being totally truthful about the ingredients in their cigarettes. And mm-hmm. so the federal government stepped in and said, all of you tobacco companies, the primary ones and even the secondary ones, you owe revenue back to the individual states based on the calculations we have made that the damage that has been done to individuals there. And some formula came up, but Indiana was due a little over $2 billion in the tobacco settlement issues. And that is one that I authored and sponsored in the House of Representatives that brought over $2 billion spread out over the years to Indiana as a result of the settlement with the tobacco company. And that revenue, Indiana was the only, well, the first state, I don't know if we're still the only one, that dedicated the total amount to health care and preventive endeavors in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, a lot of efforts have been created here over the years for smoking cessation and prevention and all.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it, and it's all being supported by that money from the settlement, to be sure. How do you think that Northwest Indiana is going to fare now that from last year's General Assembly session, last General Assembly session rather, earlier this year is what I meant to say, about the way to help fund infrastructure improvements, and most notably roads and bridges with the increase in the fuel taxes?
Well, you can see some of the fruits of that already by virtue of the repaving of 51, which is Broadway, the whole length of it going from Gary, beginning at the northern end of Gary and going straight through Maryville and out to Crown Point. And you can see it on I-65 where they're adding another lane south of Maryville where it comes down to two lanes, and there I'm not aware of whether they have begun the work on the bridges, but it is without a doubt one of the main projects that we needed here in Lake and Porter County,
right. Mm-hmm.
Dealing with the roads and so forth. Another effort that I hate to leave undone is the emissions test, where 92 counties in Indiana, only Lake and Porter counties have to have the automobiles go through this emissions test. And in research has shown that the local cars are not above the allowable amount of emissions. We have the unfortunate situation of being lumped in with Chicago and the Chicagoland area, where the major portions of the emitting above the EPA limits have been occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have worked and tried hard to get Lake and Porter County drawn out of that geographic map that they have.
Okay.
And we have even talked to our congressional delegation. But efforts, it will have to be carried on by someone else, because it looks like it won't happen during the next session, whatever will ultimately come out of why we, the only Lake and Porter County, are the only two counties that have to have our cars taken every other year to have this testing done.
Well, it seems like Charlie Brown, that as you say, that's one of the things you'll get to see from the sidelines as your colleagues of the General Assembly meet in the next sessions and the ones in the years ahead. But you'll be back up here in Northwest Indiana. Can you give us any idea of what's planned in the future for you and your family?
I'm still in relatively good health, so I'm thinking about running for one of the local offices.
Huh?
The county council, and And hopefully I will be making an announcement relatively soon as to whether that is what will actually happen.
Now, how about any thoughts about endorsing whoever might want to choose in the Democratic Party to run in the primary and maybe in the course then of the general election next November to fill your seat as the member of the House District number 3?
Yes, I am committed to supporting Reagan Hatcher, who currently is a city council person here in the city of Gary. But I am intrigued by this young lady's talents and abilities. And so I will be making an endorsement as soon as she is ready to make her announcement, and I will stand with her for being my replacement there in the 3rd House District.
Now, do you know if she's made any plans or making any plans to make an announcement soon?
Oh, yes, she is. She's okay. In fact, she may be ready to make her announcement now that I have officially announced that I will not be running again.
So I suppose she wanted to kind of do things methodically and in proper order, that you have to make the announcement that you're not going to run for re-election. And, of course, that means you can step back and watch everything happen from that point on. But as you say, if you're sort of supporting Reagan Hatcher for the position, that's wonderful. We'll have to watch for that as well, too. And as always, Representative Charlie Brown, thank you for spending time with us to talk at length about your time serving with the General Assembly, 35-plus years, things that you've been able to accomplish and things that you've worked at and will continue to work on here as you go into your final legislative session. And we hope to have a chance to chat with you, maybe have you on as an election night analyst sometime soon, I hope.
That would be great. All right.
Charlie Brown, thank you very much. We appreciate you taking time to talk today.
Thank you.
Indiana has inked a sister state agreement with the Indian state of Karnataka. Several companies in its tech hub capital, Bangalore, are planning big expansions here in Indiana. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Annie Ropeek reports the sister state agreement is designed to tee off more cultural exchanges.
Adam Kaplan is vice president of the nonprofit Sister Cities International. City, state, or otherwise, he says, these relationships have a similar goal, to promote understanding through the ongoing exchange of pretty much anything. Kaplan says they're often set up around business expansions, such as those Karnataka-based tech services companies Infosys, Wipro, and now Axiscades are planning in Indiana.
In a way, it's a signal that you're in this for the long haul and that you aren't interested just in their business, but interested in cultivating a relationship with their community.
Kaplan says the partnership ought to help grow the burgeoning Indiana-Indiana economy through more travel, business development, and educational programs. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb is directing Indiana Excise Police to issue warnings to stores selling cannabis oil, or CBD, for the next 60 days. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Brozier reports that the guidance comes after Attorney General Curtis Hill issued an opinion last week saying that the possession, sale, and manufacture of CBD is illegal, with the exception for those who are suffering from treatment-resistant epilepsy.
Governor Eric Holcomb says in a statement, stores in Indiana have sold CBD for the past few years, so the excise police will issue warnings over the next 60 days to give stores a chance to remove the products that contain THC from their shelves. Rick Monteith owns Georgetown Natural Foods Market in Indianapolis and sells CBD to several customers suffering from various medical issues. He says he will only be able to sell one type of CBD oil that contains no THC after the warning period.
I just think it's more examples of our politicians not understanding industrial hemp, that the CBD products that retail stores are carrying contain either a trace amount or no THC.
Monteith says his store isn't licensed through the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission, so he questions whether excise police have jurisdiction to do a regulatory check at his store. Holcomb signed a bill earlier this year allowing the use of CBD for those suffering from epilepsy. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Brozier.
Two South Bend lawyers are suing 62 Indiana hospitals for allegedly systematically falsifying records and defrauding taxpayers out of more than $300 million. The lawsuit claims that the hospitals violated the provisions of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. The act provides grant funding to help hospitals transition to electronic health record systems. And to get the money, hospitals must respond to at least 50% of the medical records requests that they receive within 3 business days. The lawsuit claims that the hospital's falsified records to meet those requirements. The attorneys discovered issues with claiming some of the electronic medical records when they were working on some unrelated personal injury and medical malpractice cases. They tracked the records requests that they made to four hospitals, compared the number of the completed requests to those that had been reported by the individual hospitals. Lawyers added that the other 58 hospitals to the lawsuit after they had identified what they called statistical correlations that they say showed the hospitals were contemplating some similar falsified requests. The court documents state that seven IU Health hospitals are named in the suit. Representatives from IU Health and the Columbus Regional Hospital, also named in the suit, declined requests for interviews about this lawsuit. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Goodwill Industries of Michiana Incorporated is offering a very special free program for people that live down in the Rensselaer area this next week. And we'll also talk about some other things that the Goodwill Industries of Michiana is doing to help people here in Northwest Indiana. We have with us the president and CEO of Goodwill Industries of Michiana, Debbie Coble. With us, Debbie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, take a few minutes first and tell us a little bit more about the free senior community service program application day that is going to be offered on Wednesday the 6th down in Rensselaer.
Sure. Down at the Jasper County Community Services Center, we are going to have from 10 to 1 the opportunity for anybody who's over 55 to come and apply if they're looking to get into employment. There's certain criteria that needs to be met, but if you are over 55, you're needing to get back into the workforce or want to get back in the workforce, come down and have a conversation with us, and we'll talk to you about what all we might be able to do to help you get there.
I think one of the important things that people need to know about the relationship that Goodwill Industries, or actually any of the Goodwill Industries, not just the one that covers Michiana, which includes Northwest Indiana, but all of them do, they play a very important role in linking people together who, for whatever reason, I think it kind of maybe originally started out because people who had disabilities and the like, to learn trades, to learn skills that in turn could help them get jobs in the future. And Goodwill Industries still does a big part in that, I know, too, in helping people. And that's why the stores are very important and a lot of other activities are very important with Goodwill Industries. But there are a lot of ways now that Goodwill Industries, in particular here in Michiana area, that basically can help people that, like you say, need the help to get back into the workforce, especially if they've been out for a while for whatever reason, I understand.
Right. We serve those individuals that maybe that it's a little more difficult for them to get back into the workforce. So whether it's an individual who is a senior who's been out for a while and wants to get back in, most definitely. But we also work with individuals who've had some felonies. So they may have that blemish on their record, and sometimes that can be hard to break it back into employment. Mm-hmm. We also work with individuals who are first-time low-income moms. So maybe this is your first baby, and after the baby comes, you know you're going to have to get back into the workforce. So we have some services that will actually help you during pregnancy and then as well as after the baby comes to help you get self-sufficient.
Now, this is a very special free senior community service program application day coming up on Wednesday the 6th. Is going to be at the Jasper County Community Services in Rensselaer. If anybody is interested, is there anything they need to do ahead of time or just show up there?
Just show up. Make sure that you bring your Social Security card or birth certificate along with a driver's license or a government-issued ID so that way we can get you started.
One of the other things that Goodwill Industries of Michiana is established across the region in all of the communities in which they're in, the latest of which is Griffith, because they've opened not only a new retail store, but they've also opened up what is called a community career center. For people that aren't familiar with these centers, tell us about that.
Sure. The best way to describe them, first of all, is they're free. So any of the services that we provide in there do not cost you anything to come in. That's why we have our stores. But it's kind of that over-the-shoulder help. If you want to find employment or want to upgrade your employment, we're going to work with you to help get that resume together, the interview together, make connections with employers, and then help you find that job that you're looking for.
I know that there are a couple interesting statistics that you mentioned that's important for people to know about the relationship that Goodwill Industries has with helping people find jobs. One of them in particular talks about the fact that every 38 seconds of every business day, somebody earns a job with the help of Goodwill Industries. It's very interesting that to have so many people that are involved in that.
Well, really, when you think about it, there are 162 Goodwills like ours across North America. All of us doing the same thing. We do it differently, but our goal is the same. Help folks reconnect into the workforce successfully.
I think that we see about one in particular was something that's called Ability First. What is that all about?
Sure, that works with individuals with disabilities. So for individuals who have a disability, I prefer to call limitation, and
right.
we all have them, right?
Right.
But they're having that trouble making that connection with the employer to find that job that's going to focus on what they do so well. We can work with that individual to help them make those connections and secure that job. And if it takes them a little longer to learn the job, we can actually provide a job coach at no cost to the employer to come alongside and help them learn that job.
We're talking with Debbie Coble, who's the president and CEO of Goodwill Industries of Michiana, which is based out of South Bend, but they do include all the facilities here in Northwest Indiana, including here in Lake and in Porter counties in particular. Some of the other programs I know, Debbie, that are maybe they're related to what the community career centers that are set up by Goodwill Industries do. They may not be directly related, but there's some of them in particular, a couple in particular mentioned about one that a program that is called Second Chance at Work. What is that all about?
Sure, that's all for individuals who have felonies and want to get back into the workforce and are just having that trouble making that connection with the employer to be able to get that job. And what we'll do is we'll work alongside the individual, work with the employer to help find that right job match so that person can be successful.
Mm-hmm. And there's another too, I understand, called Out of School Youth. What's that all about?
Sure, that one I love because, you know, it's from 16 to 24-year-olds. So if you're haven't gotten your high school diploma, we're going to work with you to help you, encourage you to go back and get that first and foremost because we know that that's the foundation for everything. But then we're going to work with you to help you get the training that you need to get that foot in the right direction so that as you enter into adulthood and have a family and care for yourself, you're set to go.
There's another program that the Goodwill Industry doesn't run directly, but works very closely with, is another. It's called the Nurse Family Partnership.
This is another awesome program. This is all about working with first-time moms. They have to enroll before 26 weeks of pregnancy, and they're assigned a nurse. Once again, all these services are at no cost to the individual. And the nurse is going to walk alongside mom through her pregnancy and up to 2 years of age with the child to ensure that everything is just going as best can be expected. And then after the baby's born, Goodwill will come along and help mom find a job and reach self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm. There's another program I know, too, that's, I guess, related maybe in a way to the Second Chance at Work program. But in particular, it's dealing with group violence and intervention. There's a program, I guess, that's already set up over in mm-hmm. South Bend, I guess, where it originated, at least for the Michiana Goodwill Industries offices. There's one that's going to be set up or is underway in Gary, too.
It is. This is actually a national movement called Different Things. Gary calls it Gary for Life. And we were privileged to be invited to come along and partner with the community. You have officers, you have the government, you have judges, you have prosecutors, all involved to send a new message to individuals who are involved in that group violence and doing the shooting and stuff. We're here to help you if you let us, but we'll stop you if you make us. So our first defense is let us help you get out of that lifestyle that's causing so much violence. Get your life together. Get moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Now, how has the program in South Bend gone since it's been started?
It's gone very well. What we have seen is ever across the nation, we've seen an uptick in shootings this year. So South Bend is not unlike the rest of the nation. But what we're finding overall, though, is a reduction in the violence caused by gang members or groups or whatever you want to call them, and actually getting to watch individuals leave that lifestyle. And we know that for everyone who chooses a different path, not only is their life probably being saved, but with the countless other ones that they may have encountered in a negative way are saved as well.
Now, has the Gary for Life program been underway for a while?
It has been. We've been underway for at least a year or 2 years. I can't remember the exact date we started. But it is making a difference. We have individuals who are involved who are saying, yes, I want to change my life and I want to move forward.
That's great. So, now, if anybody happens to stop by any of the community career centers, as they're called, the newest of which we mentioned, is on 45th Avenue.
Yes.
It's in Griffith. In fact, right on the Griffith side of 45th Avenue.
Yes.
The other side, of course, is Highland. It's kind of confusing, but the idea is you'll see the new Goodwill retail store there, and the community career center is right next door. That is where you can go in if you have questions about any of these programs, as well as finding out more about the programs that the Career Center offers?
Yes, most definitely. We're open Monday to Friday, and so just stop in and see us, and we'll be more than happy to answer any of your questions. And also, too, if I can just mention that if you don't have your high school diploma and you're 18 years old and you want to go back and get it, we can help you with that as well through our Excel centers. We have one located in Hammond. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to open our second one in Gary next year. But it works with 18 and older to go back and get that Core 40 high school diploma.
That's right. And so. The Hammond Center, by the way, is located on 165th.
It is.
In Hammond,
yes.
Right, not too far off to the west from Indianapolis Boulevard there in Hammond.
So correct. It's easy.
Debbie Coble is the president and CEO of Goodwill Industries of Michiana Incorporated, talking about the various programs that are available for folks that are interested, certainly through the community career centers, as well as talking about the very special program coming up here on Wednesday, December 6th. It's in the morning hours at the Jasper County Community Services in Rensselaer. And Debbie, thank you very much for being with us to talk about all these things.
Thank you for having me.
Our next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
When Gary was a great city, there wasn't a suburbia. You know, you have people who live way out of any big city now that drive hours to get into town to work, and then they go back out. You know, it's just part of a general thing that happened all over the country. When I was a kid, it was a big, bustling city, active, many department stores downtown. You know, I think the times changed. The mill went down. People started to move out, including the businesses. The mall was built out in Merrillville, and so a lot of the businesses left downtown and went to Merrillville, and so did the customers. The U.S. Steel was the largest mill steel producing plant in the world at that time. Now it's maybe a quarter of what it was. Much like Detroit's story, you know, I think if you have a city that's like a one-trick pony, like we're all based on the activity in the mill in Detroit with the cars, well, if those industries go down, then you're in trouble. Gary's not the only place that has happened. The inner cities have been really torn apart in a lot of the country. It's not a story unto itself. You know, it's patterns all over the country, I think. One thing happened during the 60s was that the city opened up to African Americans where you could buy a house anywhere. There was a lot of redlining going on at the time, and a lot of people were scared out of their homes. One thing that I never understood was why people would flee, because if you don't flee, nobody can move in. When I grew up, African Americans were relegated to one part of the city or another. Things started to expand. There were a number of people fighting for civil rights in the area. Glen Park was basically all white, and then we had the central districts where black people were basically crammed. I remember when I was a kid, there's a park there called Gleason Park, and the park was basically divided in half. And we used one side of the park, and the whites used the other side of the park. The funny thing that I remember about that, the African American side of the park had this great big swimming pool that we used to use. The other side of the park had a small wading pool, so none of us were dissatisfied with with that from my side of the city. There are a lot of undercover things that we suffer that nobody ever knows about. Like when I was going to Frable, which was a predominantly black school that had some whites and Latin Americans in the school. But we would get the books from the white schools, you know, after they had used them. You know, things like that, subtle kinds of things that nobody hears about. You know, there's all kinds of ways to have racism that don't have to be blatant.
There is an organization here in Northwest Indiana called Hannah's Hope. And we'll find out more about it from the family members who helped create the program. It's the idea of Michael and Mary Martinez here in Northwest Indiana. And Michael is with us to talk about Hannah and about Hannah's Hope. Thanks for being with us today.
Chris, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about Hannah Martinez, the young lady who sadly is not with us any longer, but she seems to live on in the form of the nonprofit organization.
Correct. Hannah was, and it still is, my middle daughter. She was born with a prenatal stroke.
is what we were eventually told the diagnosis was, and you know, with that suffered many challenges along the way developmentally. Mm-hmm. And what my wife and I did was shortly after finding out her diagnosis, we had an idea to host a golf outing. And what we did with that golf outing was to raise some money for other kids with special needs and got involved in the First Steps program, which helped Hannah with therapies and her development aspect of life. And we ended up having a golf outing 8 years ago, and we've spawned into this little organization here that is now Hannah's Hope, which we thought would be just a small little endeavor and just turned into this big thing. But Hannah was... She was an inspiration. I've told people 1,000 times. She never spoke a word, never took a step, and she did more with her 3 years on this earth than most people do in a lifetime.
One of the things that you note when you go to the website and take a look at the mission statement to learn more about Hannah's Hope is that it's an organization that provides developmental equipment to kids with special needs, as well as connecting families by making life and communities more accessible. And one of the things that's interesting, too, which kind of gets us to the latest event here, is the grand opening of what is called Hannah's Hope Playground. Tell us where it's located and describe it. I understand it's a very, very unique playground.
It is. It is the brainchild of 7 years of sitting, looking at magazines, trying to pick out unique equipment so that all kids can play regardless of ability. It again started as an idea while sitting at a park out in Schererville, where my wife and I were there with my oldest daughter at the time, and only one of the two children could play. There was no equipment for Hannah to use. Mm-hmm. And what we did is, we teamed up with Game Time, which is a playground equipment manufacturer, and Sinclair Recreation out of Michigan. And we've opened a playground right in downtown Portage at Founders Square, right behind the new fire station. It's a 17,000 square foot playground with some very unique equipment. It is going to be recognized as a national demonstration site for playground in terms of inclusivity. And what we did is about a week and a half ago, we opened up that playground with a ribbon cutting, and we had probably 300 people there, parents and kids alike, which we're able to now reconnect families to play as one cohesive unit if you did have a child with special needs.
Now, you usually think of a playground having the typical slides and swings and things like that, and maybe a teeter-totter, you know, within the new version of that. What is so unique about what's been set up in this particular playground? Because I know that you've designed it on purpose to make sure that youngsters with developmental issues can learn as well as grow and hopefully get stronger.
Correct. We still have the slides. We still have swings. We still have the teeter-totters. We still have all those things that you would find at a normal playground. We did not want to have this playground known as, you know, quote-unquote, the handicap playground. We
right.
wanted this to be a playground for all. But some of the equipment that we have a roller table. So if a child is in a wheelchair, they can put themselves on this table and kind of pull themselves through this little tunnel on these roller bars. The seesaw that we have is not your typical two-person seesaw. It is a seesaw made for four or five people. There are two seats on each side with a small disc in the middle where if a child is unable to sit up, they can lay down on the disc. We have six or seven different types of swings. And on many of the pieces of equipment that you go there, we have a small sticker that Hannah's Hope's put up there with a QR code that a parent or a therapist can scan that QR code, and it takes to a website which gives ideas on how to utilize that equipment for developmental purposes.
What kind of a reaction have you gotten since the grand opening to this very unique and all the features on this playground?
We've yet to hear a bad word about it. We've had nothing but great feedback. A lot of what Hannah's Hope has done in the past is, like you had mentioned earlier, Chris, was we purchased equipment for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So if you attended a Hannah's Hope event and you know, you donated money to our golf outing or a bowling tournament or a craft fair or something of that nature, you know, that money was put to good use. We don't have any paid employees. We're all volunteers. And that money was was to help a kid somewhere down the line, you know, reach their fullest potential. But, you know, our supporters don't always get to see that. So to have this playground be a very tangible item that everyone can wrap their head around and go grab with their hands and say, you know what, I went to a Hannah's Hope event, I was a part of this, and we tell everyone, this is your playground as much as it is ours.
Now, I know that you and your wife, Mary, have devoted so much time and energy into this project in particular, the playground in particular, but obviously everything else that is offered by the Hannah's Hope organization. Any other things that you all have in mind or are in the works right now that you're hoping to be able to unveil in the future?
Well, there's still going to be, you know, we had a lot of questions, you know, that exact question. What is the next project for Hannah's Hope?
Right.
We are going to continue on a daily basis to help kids throughout Northwest Indiana reach their fullest potential, either through equipment, utilizing the playground. We're going to continue those missions that we do. But also, there's also going to be a phase two to the playground. We're going to need some seating. We're going to need some more shade. There's also going to be an entryway sign that we're going to put up. So, you know, we've told people a thousand times that we've been talking about this playground for so long. This is not the end of Hannah's Hope. This is just the beginning. I really think this playground now being so tangible for Northwest Indiana is going to really be a jump starter for us.
Now, do you think that there are other projects that Hannah's Hope is going to be able to work with in conjunction with working with the city of Portage, in addition to the expansion that you want to see on the playground?
We've never ruled anything out. Anytime anyone would like to come with us with an idea, if it fits our mission and we can help, we're gonna do our best to do so. I can't say for certain, but I mean, who knows? There may be another playground in another city somewhere along the line.
Michael Martinez, thank you very much for spending time talking with us about Hannah and about Hannah's Hope. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. It was my pleasure.
Michael Martinez, who along with his wife Mary have created Hannah's Hope. It's a nonprofit charity that was started in honor of Hannah Martinez, who passed away at the age of 3. She had been born with severe brain damage caused by a prenatal stroke, but her memory is living on in the hopes of helping other young people that have developmental problems and their families be able to cope with these things and learn and grow from this. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for being with us today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we will have our regular conversation with Tom Pappas, who is a member of the City of Portage Veterans Committee. We'll talk about some veterans issues of note here in Northwest Indiana, as well as what the committee is going to be taking up at its next regularly scheduled meeting in December. And we'll also have representatives from Smoke Free in the G, as the advocacy group is called, and we'll see how it's going to fit together with plans to create more smoke-free places in Northwest Indiana. That and more coming up on Regionally Speaking tomorrow. We hope you'll join us for that.